The individual that's going to share with us tonight, I met in these rooms. And she is an important member. I always look forward to having her in the meeting because of what she shares and her perspective on recovery. We have butted heads a few times with service, but that's to be expected. I mean, if everybody thought the same way as I did about things, it would be an insane world. So I appreciate the fact that people have differing opinions on how things should be done, because nobody has all the right answers, as it states in the second tradition. This individual just celebrated a milestone very shortly ago. Like within X amount of time, I will let her tell you about that. Again, I appreciate the fact that she found us and has become a valued member for me. So without further ado, Penelope, would you please share with us for 40 to 45 minutes, or as long as you want to share? The floor is yours.
Thank you, Jay. Well, that's quite an introduction. My name's Penelope, and I'm an addict.
Hello,
Penelope.
Penny, hello.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jay. I mean, I'm wondering why Jim wasn't asked, because I know it's his clean time birthday today, this week as well. And, you know, it's nice to be in with the winners. And, you know, I recognize Jay as being a winner as well. He has a lot of clean time too. And for me, that is, it just shows that this program works. As he says, we all have differences of opinion, though I would just say that it's not just my opinion. I say, you know, when I'm talking about anything that's connected with the fellowship, it's usually a spiritual conscience more than an opinion, which comes from a completely different place, I believe. And, you know, I and we do all have different ideas of how the fellowship should be run, how we should implement the traditions. And well, we could have something to talk about, didn't we? my name's Penelope, and I'm an addict. I got here in not just at Higna, but into the rooms of NA after a long battle with drugs of various kinds that took me to various places. Some of it in the beginning was great, you know, it's like, hey, you know, getting high on life and using up all my vital energy, which was part of, you know, the high. And then started to get darker, worse, the paranoia, the mental illness, you know, the psychosis of, you know, drug-induced psychosis. And, you know, for me, you know, my body started to become worse for wear, you know, but it got worse and worse. And if you think you've had a rock bottom and you just think you might float into an NA meeting and get clean, well, that's great. I really like it. I mean, I hang out with a lot of newcomers and people. I spend a lot of time on the front line because I've been at home for a couple of years with the world situation as it's been. And I'm older and more vulnerable, apparently. So But you know, there are people who really, really want to get and stay clean. And if you have a desire and you have the willingness to put with it, then this program will work for you. I mean, because it takes work, four letter word. It takes work, step work, you know, feeling that you really like when you're on the edge of something, you know, and you think you might use over it, is understanding what those spiritual principles are. You know, the one that we get to in the beginning is because, you know, I somebody I was working with once said to me, "My disease lies to me." And I thought, "You think?" I know it does. It lied to me for a lot of years and I believed it. And it still can if I listen, you know. And the thing about it is that, you know, this disease is cunning, baffling, powerful, patient. And if you fall into a bit of kind of complacency, you know, like, "Oh, I don't need to pray today. Maybe I'll miss the meeting. Maybe I'll watch TV or, you know, do something else." Or, you know, I mean, I'll tell you, the longest I've ever gone without a meeting is 8 days. And you know, that was when I was you know, at university, and it was because of the program that I was able to go to university that my mind had cleared enough to be able to concentrate and apply my being to what I was learning. I have never relapsed, and I say that because I hear a lot of people who think that relapse is a part of the program, and it isn't. You know, I was listening, and I don't want to be controversial, and I'm sorry if it applies to you, because, but you know that when you get this program, you never need to use again. And once you've got here, but there's a lot of talk in a lot of the meetings I go to with young people that actually think that relapse is something that is like, it's like you, something you do, you know. Oh, I haven't had my first relapse yet. Listen, some people die on a relapse, and it's not something that is suggested. You know, what we suggest is don't pick up the first one. And that's, you know, for me, that's been what I've done. So it's not my experience relapse. Having said that, there are things like tobacco, things that I used as well as that have become a part of my active addiction that I thought I couldn't live without, and that was a struggle for me, because I did pick them up again after I'd been free of them for 8 years. And but you know, that doesn't affect my clean time, but for me it was very scary. I felt like my addiction had got hold of me again. You know, and I know that we all are individuals that work a program that is tailor-made for us, you know, because we're all free to have a higher power of our own understanding. And you know, for me it works in a particular way that might not work for, you know, you or the next person over there, or you know, anybody else. You know, I took drugs for a long time. I acted out in ways that I'm not proud of. You know, it affected my family, you know, I lost a lot in my using. I lost my career, my my family, my children, my two marriages, and several other relationships. I haven't been a saint in recovery. I think we all find rock bottoms on different areas of our lives. And for me, money and relationships and looking for stuff outside to fix what's going on inside, even though in the beginning I made a decision that I was going to recover from the inside out and not fix myself with all sorts of things that people were, going off and getting careers. And I thought I needed to have a good grounding in what the program is about, what it tells us that we can be happy, joyous, and free. And I wanted that. People were laughing in the meetings. People often laugh at me because I'm a bit funny. I not funny, ha ha. I don't think I'm a bit weird, but then I think there's a lot of addicts that are a bit weird. Some of the people I hung out with that had a sort of maverick type program, which I saw the downside of that if they relapsed, when people with a lot of clean time as well. And I've heard that someone with a lot of clean time is nearer the next drug than the newcomer that's just come in the room. And I'm not cured. I know that. I'm just as liable. Maybe I'm more because I'm sensitive. I've become more sensitive in recovery to things that upset. But I've learned how resentment doesn't exactly help me. Resentment gets in my way. It's a cloud that gets in the way of the sunshine of recovery, and sometimes I feel like I'm talking to the wall with people that are in active addiction or want to get clean, but the disease grabs them and takes them back out, and they're not listening and they don't hear, and I don't know why that is. But the thing is that I'm willing to help, and I've always been willing to help newcomers. Sponsorship's been a really, really important part of my recovery. My first sponsor was a lot younger than me. I used to look for all the differences, and I used to think, what does she know about me? I've been around the world, I've done this, I've been famous, I've been infamous, I've been, this, and I've been in these many relationships. What do you know about me? It's like, but you know what? She knew how to work the steps, and I had to get rid of all my reservations around that. And I worked the steps with her, and it was brilliant. I had so much freedom from owning that first step, owning the way addiction had affected me, and I had never ever seen it before. That self-honesty that comes with just this w awakening of the spirit, and some say the conscience, or and being able to be honest about that opens the door to the higher power. And I don't know what that is, these miracles that happen in the rooms. People come and they just, you'd never give them a second chance, you'd never give them a chance, and they get clean. And you think, what happened? What's different about Because after I'd been clean for a while, I realized some miracle had happened in my life where, I had tried all sorts of ways to stop using. I'd tried different substances, different places, different relationships, different drugs, different behaviors, and it was all the same pain. I did not know how to get clean. I tried everything, and I came to NA, and something happened. I've tried to define it a lot of times, but it is something that I heard this. I had a tape. We used to have cassette tapes, not CDs, not downloads. We had cassette tapes, and I had this cassette tape of an American woman called Dr. Holly, and she was quite famous. And I remember she was like my first sponsor. She was like, I listened to this tape because she spoke about the program, and she used to talk about God's grace, and that you can't earn it. It's not about being good. It's something that gets settled on you. And I do believe that's what happened to me. because when I looked in retrospect, when I came, I'd been clean a few months and I didn't know what had happened. I really didn't know what had happened to me. I was laughing and I could not get through a reading of how it works without, giggling all the way through it, this kind of idea that something had happened and I didn't know what it was. And people in the meeting used to laugh as well. And it felt like a spiritual gift, a spiritual awakening of some kind, I know in the formulation of 12-step programs that they've been quite a lot written about, what happened in the beginning. I think Carl Jung said something about, this guy who kept relapsing and could not stay clean. And, he talked about the fact that he hadn't had a spiritual awakening. And, there's been talk about that since, about the fact that if you have that, you can stay, and I don't know, you can't buy it. I don't know. I paid a lot of money and time and cost me from my heart and my soul to, to become a member. But I do know that spirit, we look for the spirit in the drugs, we looked for the spirit in other things that would, make us all right, because there's something missing in me. I never felt like I was a whole person until I put a drug in me. And I think that is part of why people die. This is a killer illness. I take it quite seriously, as you can hear. And it's just about the thing that they told me in the beginning is, no matter what happens, do not pick up the first one. And I internalize that. It's tattooed inside my eyelids, and for a long time I couldn't understand why people would think that it was worth changing this gift, for a drug, it's like a diamond. And I describe that metaphorically as something that, it was like finding a diamond in a junk shop. And, you wouldn't throw it away, You'd keep it. And that's what I've tried to do. And they told me, if you want what What we've got, if you want to keep what you have to give it away, and that's what I've tried to do, is share it with others. And sometimes it works, and I have a lot of friends in recovery that have done the same thing. And it works if you work it. Somebody gave me a badge that belongs to the NA, like the Just for Today badges, and we have badges on Higna as well now. It had like the London Underground thing, and it said on the top, it works if you work it, and then across it was like guaranteed. I've done a lot in recovery, that I, experience life on life's terms, my fifth NA birthday, I was with my dad when he passed, to wherever we go to. I didn't want him to leave. He wanted me to be with him. And I was able to be present. I found it very difficult. At one point, I had to go out and have a walk. It felt like this really heavy thing was happening. And, I was 5 years clean. I didn't want to use. I'd spent months with him making amends, talking through all the misunderstandings from the past. And the last thing I wanted to do was pick up, even though that was the pain that I picked up heroin on, when my mother died. And it was unbearable for me at the time because I was using other drugs. I was still in active addiction. And so I'm aware that a lot of people have died in the last couple of years. A lot of people have experienced grief. And for me, I had to learn how to grieve. I had to learn how to grieve my mother as well as my father. There is a process that we go through, and I needed a professional to help me with that. But I went to meetings and I shared about my loss. My children have recovered. I dragged them around my rock bottom, through like the various geographicals and all the friends they lost and all the damage that was done to me emotionally meant that I wasn't 100% able to be the good mother that I had aspired to be before I picked up certain drugs. And emotional abandonment is something that I understand today what happened, and I can't go back to the 8-year-old, and make it any different. But I can move on from today and be a better mother, and I did that. I was at home with my children, making dinner, and God, getting the money together, because the money was gone, right? Get the money together to get the food together, to put it on it, to cook it and put it on the table. It was a real struggle in early recovery. And and then one of them would look at the other one, and the table would tip up, and the food was on the wall. I had skateboards sticking out in the wall. I mean, my early recovery was tough. I don't know how I survived it. And then the caravan that I ended up in burnt down. But because I listened to people in the fellowship, I had, against my will, gone and put my name down on a council list to get on the housing list. And apparently I'd been 600 on the council list. And I swear I did not burn the caravan down. I don't know how it caught fire. We'd had it rewired and everything, with the electric and stuff. And it was just, oh well, we were standing in the mashed up, burnt, wet stuff that was the caravan and everything I owned in the world. In bare feet, and somebody turned up with a pair of slippers that were the exact same color blue that I had, my skirt was that I had on at the time. And my thinking was, oh my goodness, it's going to be all right, the synchronicity of that, that color coordination just opened my mind to another way of looking at this. But I have to say that I was driven with fear for like nearly a week, wondering what I was going to do. I had my daughter shouting at me and my son very silent, going off, to skate parks, and me not knowing where he was. But at the same time, I didn't know, because we got taken to this old people's home, and there was a social worker attached to this, and she was about to tell me we were going into overcrowded bed and breakfast, and the phone rang. And the night before, the man that was supposed to come and inspect what had happened, because I was on a list, and he was on holiday, and his locum was sick, so the head of housing came out, and he felt sorry for us. The dog was squelching around in all this burnt stuff, wet burnt stuff, and I didn't know where the cat went. And the kids, I mean, he just, and he gave us this 3-bedroom house, which was for abused women, and it was like, oh. It had peeling wallpaper and bare floorboards, but it was warm. It had a central heating system. And I had been so cold in that caravan, I can tell you. And it was really hot in the summer. So, the unmanageability of my life, went on. I didn't get a carpet. I scrubbed the bare floors and cleaned up the walls. And my now sponsor's mother, who I knew, because my now sponsor's mother, I knew her because she was the mother-in-law to my first sponsor. She made this box of amazing gifts, a tablecloth, an ashtray, a little vase, stuff, that you wouldn't think you'd miss. You'd think stuff around your house that you look at and you think, knives and forks, a pot to cook something in, a table to eat your dinner off, plates to eat your dinner off, all this stuff was in this box. I was just so moved, and I still, send her love. And I mean, just all of this stuff happens through fellowship, the people who cared about desperate dying addicts, me in a caravan, nobody had given hope to. There were no meetings. There was I think two in the whole of the Essex area, the East Anglia. Then one of them, I think one of them folded, and then another one opened. And I'm in this kind of house with peeling wallpaper and bare floorboards, and I'd said to my sponsor, I'm going to start a meeting on a good day. But after a bit of duvet therapy, I decided, yeah, no, it's too cold out there, it's snowing. And she said to me, "What happened to that? You were going to find a venue and open a meeting." And I was like, "Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where to look." And she started to give me a list of places I could look. So I felt like I knew what using a sponsor was about, is carrying through on their suggestions. And so I started trudging about. People just didn't want to know, and we ended up in this place that do actually vibe with NA, and they gave us a room, and I sat there with my basic text for a couple of years actually, and like a meeting, like there weren't any people. Not always. I mean, my sponsor now and my sponsor then, and a few people that I had good friends in recovery, and some of the people had come down from London and do a chair just for me, and a tea person that thought you could drink, so alcohol wasn't a drug. And it just went on from there, and I'd sit with my basic text and I'd read it. And the people that cared about the desperate dying addicts, and we used to go around and pick up people to take them to meetings. There were about one a week in the end. As it started to grow a little bit, and then series of miracles later, I ended up with a car, and I used the car to do what had been done for me. I passed on the message. I think the Americans call it asphalt recovery. And yeah, I mean, I learned to meditate. I learned a method of meditation, because I struggled with meditation a lot. I struggled to find that, that quiet from the head, and the thing is that, by learning a method which would bypass that, it's helped me. It's not spirit, it's not religious, although I did get taken on a silent retreat with a religion group of people that were religious. I found that really difficult to be silent. Even when we were eating, it was just one of those things that, obviously, those sort of things would appeal to me more now, but as a newcomer, I found it very difficult. I was still thinking I had to be good because I had been bad, and not understanding that I was very sick when I first came to NA, and that I had to get well. This is the thing. It's like, well, this gave me the option of getting well, and it took me a while to actually, know what that was. Like when the caravan burnt down, my third step came into play, because my fifth step was under the bed. And I was like, "Oh, my sponsor said I told you to burn it, but I didn't mean for you to set fire to your house." And they said to me, "Are you prepared to go to any lengths to stay clean?" And I think about it now, and I think in those days, we didn't have mobile phones. Rather than hear my head, which was like exploding at times in early recovery, and even now it can, but those days I had to go to the phone box. I had to brave the lane with all the Rottweilers and Dobermans and German Shepherds, that the eyes would come out of the darkness like some horror film, just to get to the phone box, and hope that When I put a pound in at 3 o'clock in the morning, somebody would answer and be willing to phone me back. Don't know for how long I've been talking for. Feels like a long time. I mean, various times in my recovery. I hope Jay will give me a heads up when it's like 5 minutes to go. There's been a lot of things happen. As I said, I've experienced death, going to university, traveling again, getting the ball and chain off the foot, from the dealer, I thought I would never ever go abroad again, and I've been to all kinds of countries, and sort of took it for granted until this last cat, this last couple of years with the pandemic that's happened. And now I'm a bit scared because I'm supposed to go and see my daughter, who ended up living in another country, and that was another grief and another thing. I had to practice the program, my step three. My program works today because it's automatic. I just automatically understand, what the spiritual principles are, and some of the literature, like the Triangle of Self-Obsession. I was very self-obsessed when I first got clean, and understanding how that works within me, how I can be so negative when I wake up in the morning. It's like the disease is talking to me. It's going, yeah, you're not going to make it today. You know what? You should really just retire and don't bother. And what, I mean, nobody would know if you didn't get, this dishonesty. It's like, and it chats, and I used to listen to it and think it was a real thing, part of my recovery. And I realized, through various times I've had to do step one, that what it's saying when it says it, because it gets subtle, it gets on all, gets into relationships, the relationships I've had in recovery where, I've been ill-advised at times and been in my will and not known the difference. But what I do know is that my will is painful and God's will is easy. And, when people complicate recovery, when people complicate, oh yes, but there's that, it is actually a very simple program for complicated people. I don't have to make my life so complicated and dramatic, as it used to be. I mean, that is my backstory, if you like, and I've shared on so many shares that have gone out, that about the madness of my using, my war story, and where I've come from and where I ended up. I've used for I've been clean for as more years than I used for, and that I never thought I would get to that point, because I heard people who've been using for 10 years get to 15, and but for me it was like it was almost 30 years. And in one way or another, and I do believe this disease isn't just about the drugs. It's about the drugs trigger it and make it overpowering in your life, but the disease is very present. It's the thing that I'm powerless over. The drugs are the symptom, of the problem, which is addiction. And I'm sitting here and I can't believe that I've achieved 33 years not using. I think it's 1,000, I don't know, some huge some huge amount of days. I think I worked it out. Somebody, I was on a meeting and he'd got this calculator because he's got 37 years and he calculated it. I mean, it's quite a few days, and I have lived it because in the beginning, I made a decision that I wanted to die clean. I wanted to stay in recovery, stay clean for the rest of my life, but that I was going to do it a day at a time. And that's what I've done. And I live more and more in the day, the longer I've been clean. My clean date is a clean date. Yes, it's an achievement, and I've learned how to deal with the disease. I've put down the weapons of the disease, the drugs, the behaviors, the relationships for me, and the madness around money. And picked up, I surrendered to the disease, to my higher power, the disease of addiction, and waves the white flag. And anything that is part of the disease doesn't come in. No, that is how my abstinence works. And I picked up the tools of recovery, which are the steps, the spiritual principles of the steps, and this amazing program, which is like the steps and traditions. If you're a weaver, which is what my name apparently means, is the weft and waft, or the waft and whiff. I don't know. The way that the linen goes, like of a mill, with oh, anyway, I get distracted by things like that. But that's what I hang my life on. It's the structure of my life. And I was talking to a newcomer the other day. Everything else is so much more important than getting to a meeting, reading their step work, praying in the morning to whatever they believe in to keep clean today. Everything else was more important. And hey, she picked up. And it's like I was told, you can't, you don't fit any, you don't know which way around it is, but my life in NA, my life is NA. It's the center. If you put recovery at the center of your life, everything that fell apart and got sick around it will gradually get better. But you have to remember sometimes to be patient, and that's another journey. But to be patient, because it all gets better. It's not instant like the drugs, but it does get better. And as I said, it works if you work it. So yeah, everything I put in at the, when I put the disease at the center of my life, everything fell apart. I talked to my sponsor the other day. My whole family are down with this illness, of the virus, and the concern of all of that. And I was reminded of step three, where I mean, and my grandson is in another country, and he's got something going on with him, and there's a concern there. And obviously, as a human being, a grandmother, I worry about all this. And then, but what I understand is worrying is a lack of faith. They've all got a higher power, hope, and their lives are really being experienced, like we're all experiencing life. It depends. Like I said in the beginning, you can be happy, joyous, and free. You're allowed, allow yourself. I've just found my amount of days is 12,054 days, which I think is amazing. Believe me, I don't think there's more than a couple of handfuls of days when I haven't been in contact with my higher power. I'm praying before. What was it? Somebody said the other day is, I get to my higher power before my disease gets to me. I think that's just about everything that I'll. Thank you so much for letting me share.